You might want to put your bookmark in Ephesians chapter 5 this evening. We're going to end up there in a few moments. We're going to start where we began this morning. And so after you put your bookmark in Ephesians 5, you might want to flip back over to Joshua chapter 24. I didn't say anything this morning because I had planned to do so this evening. When you study the Apostle Paul's letters, what you come to appreciate is all of the relationships with other Christians that he developed in the 20 years or so that he was preaching the gospel. It's especially evident in the last chapter of Romans. I think more than perhaps any of the other letters, it's very ironic that he mentions so many people by name and he sends greetings and obviously is familiar with them. He speaks of them as friends. And the irony of that is he had never been to Rome by his own account. But it does attest to the fact that Christians get to know each other even in different places. You worship together and then you get separated. And then you go along and all of a sudden you're worshiping together again and then you're separated. And that's just kind of the way life is among our spiritual family. We have watched folks that's been a part of this congregation through the years come and go. And the same thing happens this week as Roger and Dorinda leave. I felt like it was appropriate to say something, especially given the length that Roger's been a part of this congregation. Dorinda's only been here, 3 years? And I certainly understand and appreciate her devotion to her parents. The Goffs are wonderful people. They have served the Lord for many years and done a lot of good. The idea of caring for your folks as they age is certainly biblically sound and much neglected in our day and age. And so I certainly understand and appreciate the reasons, the primary reasons that they are leaving. And we bid you Godspeed in that. It is hard to see Roger go. That's hard to see Dorinda go too, but Roger's been such a part of this congregation for a long time and an active part of this congregation. That has been the case in a lot of your families, certainly been the case in my family as we've watched him raise his children here, watched him grow and serve this congregation in a lot of different ways, and we're indebted to you, brother, and the ties that bind us will continue no matter where we are in the future. And I will think much in the way that Paul does as he writes to brethren in other places with great affection for the work that they have done together. So he talks about folks who've been fellow laborers in the gospel, and certainly we have had that with Roger through the years. So we bid you Godspeed. We thank you for what you've brought to this congregation, all the good work that you have done. You've set a fine example for a lot of people here, and we are grateful for the time that we've had together, and may the Lord bless you in the work that you're going to go do now. I get to see him again in about a month because I'm going up there for a meeting, but for the rest of you, it may be a little while, so we're thankful to have shared this part of our lives together. Look forward to the eternal aspect that we will share together in the future. Well, this morning I had 2 points to get through, and I failed miserably at that. And so we're going to part two this evening. I do apologize for that. I really don't like doing that because I really wanted to tie things together. But we'll have to take a few minutes to do that this evening as we talk about this idea of developing the concept of leadership. And that's where I wanted to start today as we look at the idea of the need of good leadership among God's people. And I want to reiterate a couple things, beginning with the memory verse. And as I mentioned last month before the hurricane hit, I really would like for us to get back to working on memorizing these things instead of just putting them up there and then everybody forgetting them. Gave you a break on this one because I cut out the whole middle part of the verse. But if you want to say this together with me, it is a passage worth committing to memory, as they all are, but this one especially. And so Joshua says in Joshua 24 and verse 15, "And if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." And the point that we drew from this morning is, this is not simply a statement of declaration, but it is a commitment to leadership. And you see that particularly in the aspect that I want to talk about this evening. This morning we talked about the idea of leadership being something we commit ourselves to. And it not being an accidental thing. And among God's people, leadership not being something, first of all, that's confined to a certain age. Not being something that's confined to a certain gender. Although I do understand God has roles for each gender in the home and in the local congregation. But the idea of leadership is still something that's important in the relationships that we share in our communities, in our homes, in our relationships, even within the local congregation. And that's true for men and for women. And even if you're an older man or an older woman, these are qualities that are needed among God's people. So I want to encourage you, as we did this morning, to commit yourself, first of all, from the statement, "As for me, I will serve the Lord." Commit yourself to the development of those qualities that you can use to help other people to be godly. And then the second point that I made as we were concluding, and what I want to talk about a little bit this evening, is the point that Joshua makes when he commits his household. When he says, "As for my house, we will serve the Lord." And the point that I want to make is that leadership is very often developed within the roles and the relationships that take place in the home. And this is something that I think probably most of us come to appreciate as we get older, although we may not stop and think about it very much. When the relationships in the home basically involve two primary relationships. It's the husband and wife relationship and then the parent-child. And I understand there are sub-relationships, there are sibling relationships and all the extended family. But for the most part, those relationships dominate not only our home, but they dominate our lives. And God offers some very specific instructions in regards to those relationships for good reason. I asked you to put your bookmark in Ephesians, but I want you to flip over to 1 Timothy chapter 3 right quick. I didn't spend much time talking about the responsibility of overseers this morning. And I didn't for a specific reason. Most of the time when we talk about leadership within a congregation, that's the first place we go study. And the point we made about developing the character necessary to lead is what Paul is demanding of Timothy and Titus in 1 Timothy 3 and Titus chapter 1. But for the purpose of our study this evening, I want you to notice one thing that Paul says to Timothy in 1 Timothy 3 and in verse 5. When he's offering these various and sundry things that a man needs to be, not just what he needs to know how to do, but things that he needs to be, blameless, hospitable, etc., etc. He notes in verse 5, or verse 4, he needs to be one who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence. For if a man does not know how to rule his own house, how will he take care of the church of God? I want to draw from that the import that God places upon the training that takes place in the home. Now we probably don't think about that very much. Think back to when you were dating. You met some young man, some young woman. You were enamored by them, probably first physically, secondly, probably by their personality. Tracy thought that I was a lot of fun way back then, as we mentioned this morning. I mean, there are all kinds of things that attract us to one another. But most people don't walk into the relationship of marriage with the designs that marriage really is intended to accomplish. Because what happens is all of these things cause you to want to spend your life together. And then you say, "I do," and then you become serious about it, and suddenly you realize, I've got to live with this person. And I've got to live with this person. And God has assigned me certain roles as they pertain to that person. And those roles usually are not overly a part of our lives when we're dating. And so suddenly, as a man, from a man's perspective, this girl that I have been head over heels in love with, now all of a sudden, I'm responsible for her soul. I am told to be a leader in my home, and we are to join ourselves together, and God has placed a certain responsibility upon me. And if you're the woman, here's this tall, dark, handsome man that you think is a lot of fun, that you've been dating for a couple of years, and now all of a sudden, instead of, especially if you come out of a relationship where you've been real close to your parents, now instead of my father leading me spiritually with 50 years of experience, this knucklehead over here that doesn't know what he's doing is leading me. And I've got to count on his wisdom and his judgment. And it's an interesting change in life when suddenly this person becomes the other half of me. And there's a lot of adaptation that goes on. We have to learn to give our will to one another. We have to learn to think about one another. We have to adjust the way that we go about doing things, the way that we approach life, the way that we approach problems, the way that we approach day-to-day affairs. And you have to adapt. That's an interesting process to me. And the interesting aspect of it is, this is something that helps us as individuals. It helps us not to be selfish. It helps us to learn to think from a different perspective. It helps us to adopt the good qualities of our spouse. And it helps us to learn about the concepts of leadership. I would say the same thing in regards to children. In the 127th Psalm in verse 3, the psalmist says that children are an heritage from the Lord. Heritage is not a word we use a whole lot. It's a shame because it's a wonderful term. A heritage is something that we inherit. And the point that's being made in that passage is God's the one who gives us our children. We think of our children being the product of our own bodies and the product of our own love. But the reality is what the psalmist says is God's the one who gives us these children. And I assume everybody in here understands why. So that we can give them back to God. And our responsibility for those children is to raise them and nurture them and to prepare them for life and to save their souls. And you want to know what that teaches you? It teaches you to think about someone else, to think about their problems, to think about where they are and what they face and what they need. Just like marriage teaches you to do that with regards to another adult who's on the same mature plane as you are. So parenthood teaches us to do that with different personalities, with different levels of maturity, with different levels of education. And through all of these relationships, I'm going to tell you something that happens to people who are spiritual. We learn to lead. Now I want you to turn over to Ephesians chapter 5, and I want to elaborate on that just a little bit. Ephesians chapter 5, which Michael has already read for us this evening, the point that Paul's making really here as he gets to the very end of it is illustrative. He's using marriage to illustrate our relationship as Christians to Christ. But in doing so, he offers some instruction, and I want you to notice the beginning of the instruction. Back in chapter 5 and verse 21, the first thing that he says before he starts talking about husbands and wives is that we are to submit to one another in the fear of God. Now, he's been talking about our relationship together, particularly in our singing, in our teaching and admonishing one another, which is what we talked about last month, and more specifically, what we talked about last week. And so as he is talking about one another responsibilities and teaching one another and admonishing one another, he says, in fact, everybody ought to be submitting to one another. Do you understand what that means? What that means is I've got to think about you. And you've got to think about me. And it doesn't really matter who you are. And it doesn't really matter who I am. The responsibility that Christians have to one another is to rank ourselves under. That's what the word submit literally means. Military term. We're to literally rank ourselves under each other. And in the midst of that thought, Paul says, wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as also Christ is the head of the church, and he's the Savior of the body. Therefore, just as the church is subject to Christ, so let wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify it and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. No one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church, for we're members of his body, of his flesh, of his bones. For this reason, a man shall leave father and mother and be joined to the wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. Now, let's look at that from the perspective of leadership for a moment. Let's go back and look at the instruction to husbands first. Because as he has already said, the husband's placed in that role. He's in the position of headship. Do you appreciate what your head does for your body? What your head does is take care of your body. And if you look very carefully at the instructions that are given to husbands, our concepts very often about headship, and especially the world's misunderstanding of biblical headship, they are not the idea that, okay, baby, give me the checkbook, get out of the way, here's what we're going to do, here's the way it's all going to be, and you do what I say, or you're in trouble with the Lord. Tracy and I have had a running joke for years. Whenever we have to make a decision, and I tell her my opinion, I say, and your response is, and she says, yes, Lord. Now, when I say that's a running joke, folks. Because the idea of headship is not, I make the decisions and you go along with it, whether you like it or not. That's not the idea at all. Look at what he says to the husband relative to the wife. The verbs that are used, love, as Christ gave himself. Sanctify, nourish, cherish, just like your head does in regards to your body. The head's the leader of the body, right? Everybody understands that. But what the head does is always, well, should always be, in the best interest of the body. If things are working properly, then you do what's going to help you the most. And he makes this point when he says, you nourish and cherish your wife just like your own body. Do you appreciate that's what a leader does? It is interesting to me that the concept of headship and the concept of submission are not so far removed as we might think they are. Because what a leader is doing is he is submitting his will to the needs of those that he is leading. You go over to Hebrews chapter 13, where the Hebrew writer at the very end of his letter talks about the relationship of these people that he's writing to their elders. And he says that they are to submit themselves to their elders as those who watch out after your soul. I'm going to tell you about these men that serve us. I get to sit in on a lot of their meetings. They're not concerned about what they think. They're concerned about what's best for us. It's not some ego show where we get to run things. It is a continual effort to do what is best for the Christians that comprise this local congregation. That's what leadership does. Paul tells the Ephesian elders in Acts chapter 20 that they are to feed the flock or pasture the flock. Their job is to look out at the church, find out what people need, and make sure they have it. That's not running the show, folks. That's submitting yourself to the needs of others. And you want to know where you learn that? You learn that when you're a good husband. Because your job as the leader is to save the soul of your wife. To make sure that spiritually, not just physically, not just financially, not just sexually, not just socially, that you are seeing to what she needs. And I really wish that when we taught young people about marriage, that we would underscore this. You two guys about to get married. Your job is to help her get to heaven. And if you don't do it, you're failing miserably. And that needs to be said to every young person that contemplates marriage, because that's exactly what Paul says in Ephesians chapter 5. And what that does is, that takes a man who's just been living life large and having a big time, and he finally finds the girl of his dreams and he marries her because he thinks this is going to be great. And suddenly, responsibility is thrust upon him. And if he's a smart young man, what he will do is he will learn from the adaptation and the adjustments in this relationship. He'll learn how to lead. Now I want you to look at the responsibility he places upon the wife, because I think it's equally important, if you're going to lead, to understand the concept of submission. So you back up to verse 22 in Ephesians chapter 5, and he says, "Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord, giving thanks always for all," "for the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is also the head of the church, and he's the Savior of the body. Therefore, just as the church is subject to Christ, so let wives be to their own husbands in everything." This is a hard demand. Because I'm going to tell you, if we've married a woman that's really worth marrying, then the chances are she's got a will and she's got a conviction of her own. And I will tell you, in my marriage, and you can laugh or you can pity me or whatever, the most challenging part of my marriage has been taking two strong-willed people and trying to make it where we're working together. And headship's been a challenge. And submission sometimes has been a challenge, because Tracy's a lot smarter than I am in a lot of areas in life. And I'll say, "Well, that's what I think." "No, this is what I think." And that's when I want to go, "Hey, you're supposed to submit yourself. This is not how this works." It's like Kevin Costner in the Open Range movie. "How's this going to work if you don't do what I say?" Well, I don't think that's exactly what the Lord's trying to say. Even though the mentality is, you need to understand the man's role. That God has placed the responsibility of leadership upon him, and your job is to submit. For a reason. You know what Paul doesn't include in Ephesians chapter 5? He doesn't include what God says in Genesis chapter 2 when he offers the first example of marriage. Do you remember when God creates Adam and Eve, when he gives the expanded version of that in Genesis chapter 2? And he's got man in the garden, and he's got him tending the garden, and he brings all the animals in front of him, and he lets them name them, and he does all that. And when he's finished, what it says is that Adam didn't find a companion that was suited to him, a helper comparable to him. And so God caused a deep sleep. God took the rib, et cetera, et cetera, and made the woman to be a helper. Here's the reason submission is important, ladies. It's not to feed your husband's ego. Submission is important because in every relationship, I don't care if you're talking about work, I don't care if you're talking about marriage, I don't care if you're talking about within a local congregation, I don't care if you're talking about a football team. Somebody is in charge of leading, and everybody else is in charge of helping. And leaders are nothing without good helpers, and helpers are nothing without good leaders. And those two learn to work together in the various capacities that they bring to the relationship. Does that make sense? And so when he says, "Wives, submit yourselves to your husbands in everything," that doesn't just mean, "Yes, Lord." What that means is you contribute to the relationship with the end in mind. That what we are doing is we are serving God together. And this man is trying to see after my soul, and I'm going to do everything I can to help him see after my soul while I see after his soul. Unfortunately, we've just oversimplified this to the point that it's the king of his castle and the slave over here doing whatever he says. And I don't for a minute believe that's the way God has this designed. So what's the point of bringing that up when we're talking about leadership? If you're going to be a good leader, you're going to have to learn to submit yourself. You're going to have to learn to submit yourself to two primary things. First of all, you're not going to be a good leader unless you've submitted yourself to God's path of leadership. In James chapter 3, James warns about the tongue. But if you look closely at the context, what James's concern is people that want to be teachers. Because he talks about those who are teachers, they have to use their tongue a lot, and there's a particular temptation. But at the end of that tongue section, he comes back to the problem of arrogance and ego and self-will and the strife that it brings. In the bigger context, what James is warning about is people who want to lead for their own glory. You want to know what marriage teaches you? We're not doing any of this for our own glory. I'm not leading Tracy to get credit for it, and Tracy's not helping me to get credit for it. We are working together to try to bring honor to God. And when we approach this relationship that we have this way, and I watch that woman as she teaches me how to submit, how to bend her will. She's a lot better at it than I am. Then it helps me to bend my will to God. And the second part of leadership is bending your will to the needs of others. Because what I may want to see happen in this congregation, if I'm a leader of this church, what I may want to see happen may not be the best thing. I need to look from the perspective of others. I need to nourish and cherish. I need to appreciate that it's not about me. And I tell you, leadership, when it is viewed from the perspective of serving those that are being led, is well understood and developed in this marriage relationship. Does that make sense to you? I need a head nod. Yes, it makes sense, or no, it doesn't. I want you to go back to Ephesians, and I want you to flip over to chapter 6, and let me make this last observation. We'll be finished for the evening. The point we're making is that good leadership is developed in these relationships in the home. As husbands and wives, we're helping one another. We're teaching one another. We're teaching one another how to submit. We're teaching one another how to look out for the needs of others, which is something that women have to do in various capacities as well. They learn leadership and headship from the husband. The husband learns submission from the wife, because both of those things are important. But the same could be said in regards to parenthood. In chapter 6... Paul goes on, and once again, he's been talking about this idea of submitting to one another. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you, and you may live long on the earth. You fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. You want to know how you learn to be a good leader as a parent? You learn to be a good leader by pure, raw trial and error. It's just experience. And there's a reason, I think, when you go to Timothy and Titus and Paul's writing to these younger preachers about appointing elders, overseers in a congregation. And the two things that he underscores over and over is they need to be married men and they need to have raised children. And the reason is because of the relationships and what you learn in those relationships. As a parent, our job is first and foremost, and I want you to listen very carefully if you're still raising your kids. First and foremost, the soul of our children. We are under so much pressure in our society To make our kid the next Tiger Woods. To make our kid the next superstar musician. They're 12 years old. We're going to put them on The Voice and put them on national TV so they have a record contract next week. And you see it, whether it's a little town or a big town, people are pushing their kids towards fame and fortune. We want them to be able to balance a checkbook. We want them to be able to have a good education. We want them to be able to make a lot of money. We want to make sure that they know how to work their way through society and walk in the right circles and know the right people and do the right things. We want to make sure that politically they're moving in the right direction. We want to make sure they have a great occupation. Years ago, I had an acquaintance who was nominally a Christian. When he had his first child, he had a son. And we shared a lot of things in common, really liked to hunt. And he was bound and determined he was going to teach that boy everything there was about the woods. And he did. He made him a humdinger of a deer hunter. But to my knowledge, that young man hasn't darkened the door of a church building in 15 years. Bow hunting doesn't get you to heaven. And soccer doesn't get you to heaven. And band doesn't get you to heaven. And all these other things that so consume us, are they wrong? No, they're not wrong. Are they important in the development of a child? Yeah, they really are. All these different activities are helpful. But as parents, if we lose sight of the fact that what we're doing with these young people that God gives us is that we're trying to get them to heaven, if we lose sight of that, then we've missed the boat completely. And so, if I'm spending every day of my life as a father trying to make sure that my children understand who they are relative to God, if I'm helping them understand what God has to say, if I'm trying to help them enforce what God has to say. You know, one of the hard things about being a parent is that sometimes you have to make your kids do what's right at the threat of your punishment. Because you don't want them to do what's wrong later and have God punish them. And so you do that, and that's hard. And then you try to explain to them, this is what I'm doing. And it's a difficult task, but you don't know what you learn when you're doing all that every day? You learn how to lead other people to the Lord. You learn how to take care of your responsibilities at work and deal with different personalities. You got three kids, I guarantee you, all three of them are going to be different enough that you're going to have to deal with them in some ways differently. And so you learn about different personalities and you can teach this one this way and this one this way. Or you can't do this with this and that, but you can do it with that one. And then you start backing up and you look, okay, I'm a woman in a local congregation. I'm supposed to be helping the young women. Here's this young woman with this personality. Here's this young woman with this personality. They're not the same. How am I going to help them? How am I going to lead them? When we take seriously our responsibilities in the home, not only are we bringing honor to God, but we're developing the qualities necessary, men, to be elders, to be teachers, to be leaders in our communities, to be leaders at work, to be leaders at home. Women, to help other women, to by force of influence help the man. There's not a passage of Scripture that says that a godly woman can't influence a man. And that is part of the wisdom of leadership. And we desperately need it over and over and over. Now, I would ask you as we finish to turn back to Titus chapter 2 and let's make this last observation. In Titus chapter 2, which is kind of the practical place we started this morning, when Paul's talking to Titus about this healthy doctrine and all the things that come of it, and I underscored this morning, but look at verse 6, just what he says to young men. Exhort the young men to be sober-minded, in all things showing yourself a pattern of good works, in doctrine showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that one who is an opponent may be ashamed, having nothing evil to say of you. The influence that we exert in our lives, folks, is a leadership issue. And over and over and over through this section, in Timothy, in Titus, in Ephesians, whether it's talking about husbands and wives or parents and children or young men and young women and older men and older women, what he comes back to over and over and over is you have an influence. You're exerting an influence. You're leading people. You're showing people. And so I want to encourage you to, number one, start working on the qualities that are going to help you help somebody else. We need that. And number two, take seriously your responsibilities in your home. Because if you'll pay attention to your husband and your wife, and if both of you are working the way you're supposed to in bringing honor to God, and if you'll pay attention to your role as a parent, or even if you finish that and you'll just look back on it, what you've done is you've developed a lot of skills so that you can go help other people to serve the Lord. Because we need it. We need people to stand up like Joshua. We need people to stand up like David. You know, there's a wonderful little story when it's talking about David's mighty men. David and one other of his men stood in a field of lentils when the Philistines are overrunning them and the rest of the army left. And those two men stood there and defended that field and won themselves great reputation. You know what they became because of that? They became leaders. And people followed them. And we need that among God's people. So, that's the introduction to October. We need good leadership. We'll talk a little bit about overseers before it's all said and done. But right now, let's all of us dedicate ourselves to the task that is before us so that we can help our fellow soldiers and if necessary, we can lead them to heaven. Thank you for your attention today. I appreciate it so very much. If you're subject to invitation tonight, we can help you at all. We invite your response.